Hello, it's Monday, November 17th, 2008. I'm Mike Duran. On today's podcast, the privacy of our NHS medical records could be under threat.
This is about a proposal that's buried in the small print of the NHS draft constitution. And it would give researchers access to everyone's medical records.
They've undercut our plumbers. Now the Polish are the cheaper choice for security in Iraq. We speak to The Guardian's LA reporter caught up in the Californian bushfires.
We were sort of blanketed in almost like a pea super, really. This nasty sort of orange heavy air with a very acrid smell and ash over everything. I had to use my windscreen wipers to clear the ash off car windscreen on Saturday morning.
And lean times lead to lewd times as the credit crunched seeks sensual solace.
Guardian Daily. News and reports from around the world.
First, Sandy Waugh has a news update and a paper digest.
Britain's recession will be deeper and longer than previously thought, according to the Confederation of British Industry. The business group predicts the recession will run for almost all of 2009 and that unemployment could reach 3 million in 2010. John Cridlin, CBI Deputy Director General, said the speed and force of the downturn had forced it to reassess the coming recession, which they had first expected to be short and shallow. The records of millions of NHS patients will become accessible to medical researchers under new plans from the Department of Health. The proposal, which has already sparked worries about privacy, is buried in the small print of the NHS Constitution. Harry Caton, who's about to take over as chairman of the new watchdog on use of NHS data, said the proposal is ethically unacceptable. More on this to come later in Guardian Daily. Government plans to assume that everyone consents to donating their organs unless they say otherwise have been rejected by an advisory committee. The UK Organ Donation Task Force will spell out the full nature of their objections later today. Every year, 1,000 people in the UK die after waiting for a transplant. But research suggests many specialists are worried that such a move would damage the trust between patients and doctors. US President-elect Barack Obama has revealed the members of the opposition Republican Party will form part of his administration. Obama will officially take office in January, and in his first interview since the election, he acknowledged the daunting nature of assuming office at a time of war and economic global crisis. In a wide-ranging interview, Obama also promises to pull US troops out of Iraq and close the detention centre at Guantanamo Bay. The government of Somalia is on the verge of collapse, according to its president, Abdullahi Yusuf. Yusuf said the government only had a presence in the capital, Mogadishu, and that people are being killed there every day. His frank admission came as Islamist militia made rapid gains towards the capital. In football, Steven Gerrard, Wayne Rooney and Rio Ferdinand are all out of England's squad to face Germany on Wednesday. The trio all picked up injuries over the weekend and will play no part in the midweek friendly. Meanwhile, Diego Maradona's arrived in Glasgow for his first match in charge as Argentina's new coach. His side faces Scotland at Hampden on Wednesday night. Elsewhere in sport, world number 3 Novak Djokovic beat Nikolai Davydenko in Shanghai to win his first Masters Cup title. Now, for a look at today's papers, according to The Telegraph, the Conservative Party would introduce plans to make it harder to obtain a divorce if they're elected. Sticking with the Tories, Shadow Chancellor George Osborne is set to unveil an anti-recession package, including some tax cuts, the Independents calling it a U-turn. Billions will be spent on schools and hospitals, says the splash on The Times. It reports next week's pre-budget report will contain new spending pledges and tax cuts. The FT optimistically focuses on the meeting of the leaders of the G20 countries in New York. Its editorial claims the event could be as historic as the crisis it responds to and could prove the one bright light in the gathering darkness. The death of baby P still dominates many of the papers, with the Daily Mail claiming social workers knew he'd been abused but allowed him to return home. The boy's grandmother tells The Sun that she told social workers he was being abused but was ignored. The Mirror, meanwhile, goes with Beans Means Hikes. Most of its front page is devoted to the rising price of baked beans. The paper's back page, meanwhile, centres on Michael Owen's future at Newcastle United. The striker's apparently considering quitting the club. More news and sport throughout the day at guardian.co.uk.
Guardian Daily. News from The Guardian.
First, the fundamental principles of patient confidentiality could be abandoned under government plans to allow medical researchers access to our private NHS records. Small print in the NHS Constitution would allow a researcher access to the most personal medical secrets of more than 50 million people. and that would lead to patients getting a letter from a stranger asking to discuss them. The Guardian's social affairs editor John Carville has more.
This is about a proposal that's buried in the small print of the NHS draft constitution, and it would give researchers access to everyone's medical records. They could trawl the records looking for people with a particular condition, particular age, sex, and so on. And for the first time, they'd be able to write directly to those patients saying, would you like to participate in the clinical trial, not going through the GP. I think many people would be surprised to get a letter out of the blue from a stranger they know nothing about, who appears to know all about what's going on their insides.
You mentioned this is in an NHS draft consultation. Would it not need a change in law? Could this just happen?
I think it might well need a change of law. That's unclear at the moment. What we have is a warning from a new body, which is set up to deal with difficult ethical issues involving NHS and social care information. And it is saying this looks to be the way the wind is blowing. It looks as if Gordon Brown and the whole research industry is in favour of this. And what the board is saying is watch out. We don't like the look of this.
First this, would the Hippocratic Oath go next?
Well, let's hope not, and let's hope that this doesn't go either. I think when you think of the implications, it could be really worrying. What happens if you don't open the envelope with something asking you to go into a trial about yourself? What happens if one of your relatives opens the envelope? What happens, say, if a woman who'd had an abortion she'd not mentioned to anyone in the family? What would happen in that family if another person opens that letter? I think there are serious issues there, and we don't want the Hippocratic Oath to go, and we don't want medical confidentiality to go either.
Presumably, there are also concerned about the psychological impact of, to use your example, if you get a call from a researcher on abortion, if you've just suffered one yourself.
Well, quite right. I think the conventional way, the way I've done it up to now, is that it has been possible for medical researchers. They do need people. They need the right people to go for medical trials. And the trials of a new drug can benefit the people that are on it. But the way things have worked up until now has been that the researchers have approached the GP, and it's been the GP's discretion whether to suggest people from their list, and then the GP's job to contact the patients and say, look, I think it might be quite a good idea for you to go on this trial. How about it? That didn't break the confidentiality between the patient and the GP. This proposal would.
I'm sure the government would say this information could be very useful, as you've indicated yourself, and the Holy Grail is the cure for cancer. This could possibly help get us there.
Yes, but let's do it in the right way. I mean, one could imagine allowing researchers, approved researchers, under controlled circumstances, to trawl the national databases that they're building up of patients, but to access everything but the name and address. It might even be possible, if they don't think the GPs are doing the job of volunteering their patients, to send out letters to the community saying, hey guys, here are the trials of perhaps half a dozen different drugs that are going on in your area. Please get in touch if you'd be interested. The patient might think, oh, there's that one, that might help me, and volunteer, but not do it in the way which gives researchers the right to write to individuals and maybe gives the opportunity for mistakes with relatives and other people opening correspondence by mistake. I think there may be a way to get this cure for cancer that you're looking for, but not breach long-standing principles of confidentiality.
And just a brief final answer, when do we know what decision will be made?
I've spoken to the Department of Health, and they have this wonderful word, shortly. That's the best I can do. We'll know shortly.
John Carville. Elsewhere on the Guardian website today, London is set to bear the brunt of UK job cuts. Full details at guardian.co.uk/business. Read what John Lewis thinks we'll be buying, or what it wants us to buy this Christmas. That's at guardian.co.uk/lifeandstyle. If you didn't know it, it's the year of folk music. Get to know the must-have beardy tracks at guardian.co.uk/music. Plus, the website is offering a free extract from On the Hour, the BBC radio series featuring Chris Morris and Steve Coogan. Here's a taster, just to reel you in.
What do you find most useful about the top-rated newsarama that is On the Hour?
Breakfast television news.
No, On the Hour.
I don't really know, to be honest.
You've got the answer wrong. What you mean to say is you listen to it all the time.
Yeah, I do.
Good. And furthermore, if you were captured and held for 5 years in a foreign jail, you would listen to it all the time.
Certainly would.
Say I would listen to On the Hour all the time.
I would listen to it On the Hour all the time and look forward to it.
Thank you. And as you lay chained to the wall, kicking about in the straw and filth, what would be your one ray of hope?
Just to listen to that news.
What's its name?
On the Hour.
On the Hour.
On the Hour, yeah.
On the Hour?
On the Hour.
On the Hour.
On the Hour is the name of the programme.
The name of the programme, which you would listen to at all times,
is On the Hour.
This is Guardian Daily. And to get your free download of On the Hour, go to guardian.co.uk/comedy. Next, if you have a blocked U-bend, who do you call? Recently, the answer has been the local Polish plumber. Having undercut British workers in Britain, the Polish are now moving into the private security market and undercutting security professionals from this country in Iraq and Afghanistan. The numbers of ex-British soldiers working in the world's danger hotspots have dropped from 5,000 to 2,000 in 3 years because Eastern Europeans do the job for less. Mark Sherburn-Brown is the director of the National Association of Security Professionals. He claims anecdotal evidence shows that some former East European soldiers don't meet the minimum standards, as defined by British security firms, and he says former UK servicemen are losing their livelihoods.
The way the guys were teamed was predominantly all expats, with the odd American, the odd Icelandic guy and various Danish people. But on the whole, the majority of the teams were all ex-British services. Because of the way the things are organised nowadays, and it's all, you know, more and more budgets are coming into place, they're now required to get cheaper labour or reduce the cost of the price of for the guys on the ground. And what guys are refusing to do is work for minimum sort of wages, or alternatively, British companies are bringing in Polish types, East European types, you know, to cover the cost of these guys and make, obviously, increase their profits.
Well, you did mention wages, so let's talk about that. As I understand it, former soldiers can get between £80,000 and £100,000 tax-free. Now that figure might be going down to £50,000 tax-free. It's hardly minimum wage, is it?
I wouldn't say it was £80,000 to £100,000. I think, you know, you're being a bit high on that estimate. I think the maximum guys were getting were £70,000-ish, depending on the dollar rate. That was the maximum guys were getting. Yes, it is coming down, don't get me wrong. But then again, you know, look how many British contractors have died over the past, you know, 5 years since Iraq's been going for the private security marketplace. There's a hell of a lot of risk involved. And, you know, what price do you put on life? Yes, these people wish to secure the best security they can. And where they're going to go to, you know, they're going to go to, you know, ex-British forces because they are the best at what they do.
People do sign up knowing the risks, though, don't they?
Oh, yeah, very much so. Very much so. You must know the risk, you know, to benefit from the reward. I mean, you can't go in there saying that nothing's going to happen or, you know, there is a possibility that you may not return.
Just to clarify the situation, the former service staff, they're not on the front line, are they?
No, what they are, they are security contractors. Their aim is not to get involved in any firefights whatsoever. The majority of them will escort clients around the country from region to region. If, in the event that they come under enemy fire, their job is to extract. It's not to get involved in a firefight. It's to extract, get their client to safety. That is the main purpose of them being there, to ensure their client's safety.
We started this piece looking at Polish plumbers and the fact they came over to the UK and did the same job for less money. We are in the middle of a credit crunch, aren't we? This is just market forces in play.
Oh, very much so. I mean, companies have to, you know, turn a profit. You know, they have a board of directors to report to, and sometimes, you know, the PLCs. So, you know, they do have a higher authority to report to, and that they must maintain a certain profit level. That's fully understandable. But by doing that now, what they're doing is they're recruiting Eastern Europeans, you know, cheaper labour. But they're not, I'll be totally honest with you, the reports I'm getting back, you know, these Eastern European types are not very good. Their skill sets are a lot lower than the ex-British servicemen.
Just a final point, wouldn't it be better to employ security from homegrown firms where the local customs and the ways of behaving are second nature? And as I understand it, this is the way things are going.
It has been going for a while. I think what you'll find is there'll be, and it depends on contract to contract. There are many, many different contracts out there at the moment, and they all have certain requirements. But I think you'll find that what will happen, especially in the next 2 to 5 years, is that the teams will be split between expats and Eastern Europeans or local nationals, i.e. Iraqis. I think that, you know, by employing Iraqis, that is going to be the way forward.
Mark Sherburn-Brown of the NASP.
Guardian Daily. News from The Guardian.
I'm Mike Durand. Still to come on today's podcast, calls to directory inquiries indicate a shift in priorities during the credit crunch.
I guess the one that really rocks is calls for sex shops, which has gone up 1,312% year on year.
Before that, to the wildfires of Los Angeles, where some of the country's priciest real estate has gone up in flames. 3 separate fires have destroyed hundreds of homes in Southern California and forced thousands to flee the blaze, which has at times been fanned by hurricane-force winds. California's governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, has declared states of emergency in Orange, Los Angeles and Santa Barbara counties. The Guardian's LA correspondent, Dan Glaister, lives just a few miles from the danger zone.
Well, it started with very hot temperatures and very high winds on Friday in Santa Barbara, which is about 90 miles north of downtown Los Angeles. And that sort of swept into a community just immediately to the south of Santa Barbara called Montecito, which is a very pretty, hilly, coastal neighborhood, which is so pretty and hilly that it's full of lots of very rich people. And, you know, the likes of Oprah Winfrey has a home there, and you know, famously Rob Lowe and John Cleese lives up there, and it's a very nice area where there are now 200 fewer homes than there were a week ago. And then later Friday, sort of Friday evening, some fires independently started 10, 12 miles north of downtown Los Angeles in the San Fernando Valley, and that left a sort of heavy pall of smoke from there through the mountains and canyons to the coast, including where I live, where we were sort of blanketed in almost like a pea super, really, this nasty sort of orange heavy air with a very acrid smell and ash over everything. I had to use my windscreen wipers to clear the ash off car windscreen on Saturday morning.
And you are about 8 miles from the epicenter, is that
right? I'm about 8 miles from that, yeah. I'm between that fire and the coast, so the hot winds that are coming from the desert, and we're blowing at about 85 miles an hour on Saturday. Friday night and Saturday, they sort of blow the smoke and the soot and the ash and whatever towards the sea. And then through Saturday and up to Sunday morning, new fires have broken out to the south of Los Angeles, down towards Orange County, about sort of 30 miles south of downtown Los Angeles, where there were significant fires. If you remember, just a year ago in October last year, there were big fires down there, and some of those same places have got fire again. But the good news is that the winds are dropping. It was sort of in the 90s on Saturday, which I think is low 30s. The temperatures are forecast to rise again during the week, but the winds have dropped. So instead of 85 miles an hour, we've got sort of 20, 30 mile an hour winds now, which means that a lot of these fires that broke out on Friday and Saturday are reaching full containment, or sort of the one in Montecito, for example, is 75% contained at the moment.
And what advice are the authorities giving you and other residents to help protect yourselves against this conflagration?
Something like 30,000 people have been issued with mandatory evacuation orders. Now, how many of those people have actually followed them, we don't really know. There's no way of knowing. But, you know, potentially 30,000 people have been told to leave their homes. And then there's lots of other things. So air quality is extremely poor, and there are warnings about air quality from, from the mountains to the beaches, if you like. So people are you know, sort of staying indoors or wearing masks or you know, just trying to minimize their exposure to that. There were warnings about the water supply, with people being advised to drip 8 drops of bleach into a gallon of water and then boil it before using it. And so there's all sorts of fairly conflicting pieces of advice floating around for people.
The Guardian's Dan Glaister. Finally, over recent weeks, we've seen and heard many and varied examples of how the credit crunch is affecting us. More people are shopping in the discount supermarkets or buying takeaways rather than eating out. Now, the country's biggest directory inquiry operator has released figures showing how inquiries to businesses have changed over the last 12 months. As you may expect, requests for debt collection agencies are up and estate agents down. But there are some interesting findings. One of the more noteworthy is that inquiries to trade unions are up 73%. Presumably people in fear of losing their jobs are seeking protection. The Green Lobby will be pleased as inquiries to bicycle shops are up by 94%. The figures come from 118118, who receive 130 million calls annually. Its Director of Communications, William Ostrom, says what a difference a year makes.
It seems that we're going through a little bit of escapist Britain, with people wanting to distract themselves from all the problems. So calls for things like stag and hen party venues has gone way up, 239%. Cruises is up 135%. Karaoke clubs up 96%. And an interesting one, and this reflects the fact that there are a lot more of these outlets that have opened up in the last year, pole and lap dancing clubs. That's gone up 469%. But I guess the one that really rocks is calls for sex shops, which has gone up 1,312% year on year.
Well, I'm not sure I can comment on that, but do you know what the numbers are? If you say over 1,000%, if there were, 10 calls last year, then it doesn't take that many to see that figure, does it?
Well, the thing about these statistics is that they are validated by the fact that 118118 is the most called number in Britain. We take over 130 million calls a year. So 130 million calls really does give you statistical validity on the volumes. And the volumes are very high. I mean, for example, for something like rail inquiries, there's something over 150,000 calls for National Rail inquiries every day. Now, they don't all come via us, but just to give you a sense of the scale of the volumes.
So can you give us a figure on how many people are seeking solace in sexual experiences?
No, I can't actually reveal the figures that we use because they're commercially confidential. I mean, in terms of volumes of calls, for all of these categories, we're getting tens of thousands of calls a year.
Do we know why this is? Because as I understand it, these pastimes, lap dancing clubs, pole dancing clubs, escort agencies, which is also on the list, these are very expensive ways to spend your time and not really credit crunch substitutes, are they?
No, and I think that shows that people are still spending money. They're calling their credit card companies to get a new card, and then they're going out and spending, which is a very worrying indicator when it comes to the measures that are having to be taken by government and businesses now to rein in the bust that clearly is following the boom. People need to look at their finances and take stock.
Do you know or are you able to say if people sound embarrassed when asking for a sex shop?
What we're seeing is increasing number of people texting us for this information. And we see a marked distinction between what people are prepared to text us for as opposed to what they're prepared to call for. And you're quite right, there is an embarrassment factor. But having said that, this analysis is only based on calls, that's actual calls to operators. We've excluded all the text volumes. But since we're introducing texting as a new way of getting information, we're certainly seeing the number of people asking embarrassing questions has gone up quite markedly.
Okay, so 12 months ago, when we were less in need of these physical gratifications, what were the most popular requests then?
Well, there was a much more even balance. If you look 12 months ago, something like requests for car dealerships, where people were buying cars, would have been much higher. They have actually increased a little bit year on year, but what surged ahead is a 94% increase in the number of people wanting bicycles. Now, you can surmise from that people are ringing up because they want to switch to the alternative, much greener form of transport, whereas they're not spending so much on cars. So that is a very clear trend in terms of people's changing priorities.
William Ostrom. And if you'd like to see what questions are being asked right now, go to www.text118118.com. I've just been online and somebody's asking, are Skoda cars sexy? What is the average speed of a coconut-laden swallow? And perhaps more disturbingly, how old is Louis Walsh? That's it for today's Guardian Daily. Tuesdays with John Dennis will be available from 7:30 in the morning. Producing today were Sonia Rothwell and Phil Maynard. I'm Mike Duran. Thanks for listening.
Guardian Daily. News and reports from around the world.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.